broadcasts from Honolulu, Manila, and a very jittery Seattle on the 7th and 8th of December, 1941. That's our focus on this week's broadcast of Echoes of a Century. I'm King David McKenzie. That was an excerpt of an extremely rare recording of a broadcast by Hideki Tojo, a general in the Imperial Japanese Army and the 40th Prime Minister of Japan, declaring war on the United States and the United Kingdom. This broadcast was apparently made about 6 hours after the attack on Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, on December 7, 1941, December 8, Tokyo time. As the news about Pearl Harbor was breaking, American radio networks did their best to get live reports from Hawaii and the Philippines, as the White House had erroneously claimed Manila was also under attack. At 2:48 p.m. Eastern Time, during its regularly scheduled news broadcast that afternoon, the Columbia Broadcasting System was able to get a shortwave report from Manila broadcaster and journalist Ford Wilkins. It was introduced by the anchor of the report, John Charles Daly.
Continuing on the Far Eastern situation, this time we go abroad to get a report direct from the danger zone, from Manila in the Philippines, which has been attacked as we have told you. CBS correspondent Ford Wilkins has watched Manila get ready for this attack. And now, for the report of Ford Wilkins, direct from Manila, go ahead, Manila.
Thank you. The danger of panic is also great. With the bulk of the population shifted, there is sufficient shelter and protection to make the city safe enough for those who remain. Whether war comes or not, the government is seriously considering closing the schools and moving the children to evacuation centers where schools may be set up. One immediate government problem is to raise some $15 million to carry on. The original emergency fund is nearly exhausted. Manila's problems are reflected throughout the country, and they are acute in places which are considered danger zones. They are likewise reflected throughout this whole Pacific area where war threatens. Hong Kong has mobilized completely and called out volunteers. Singapore's fighting forces are standing by, ready for anything. In Java, they have been preparing for many months. In Thai, the little buffer state between French Indochina and Burma, the tension reaches its highest point. Japanese troops are crowding it on the east, and a large movement of Japanese ships accompanied by cruisers has been spotted by British patrol flyers from Singapore, steaming up the Gulf of Siam towards Bangkok. Across the China Sea from the Philippines,
due to line troubles beyond, we return you now to CBS in New York.
At about 4:06 p.m. Eastern Time, the National Broadcasting Company interrupted its programs on its two networks at the time for a live report from Honolulu. National Vespers on the Blue Network had been a few moments into a sermon by Dr. Harry Emerson Fosdick, the professor of practical theology at Union Theological Seminary. On the Red Network, a music program featuring harpsichordist Sylvia Marlowe and folk singer William Dyer Bennett was about to go into Bennett's second selection of the program. The interruption was made for a telephone call from an announcer for KGU Honolulu, an NBC affiliate, reporting from atop the roof of the Honolulu Advertiser newspaper building, which itself had almost been hit by Japanese bombers in the previous hour.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special broadcast.
Here's the bulletin. Washington, the president decided today after Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor and Manila to call an extraordinary meeting of the cabinet for 8:30 p.m. tonight and to have congressional leaders of both parties join the conference at 9 p.m. And now we take you to Honolulu.
Thank you.
One moment, please.
1 moment, please. Ladies and gentlemen, we're standing by for further word from Honolulu.
At about 6 p.m. Eastern Time, CBS received its first uninterrupted report from Fort Wilkins in Manila, who started out advising that the Philippine capital had, in fact, not been bombed as yet.
We have just received word here, not fully confirmed yet, that Guam is in trouble. First, the Commercial Pacific Company in Manila found its cable dead. Then word came through that bombers were sighted overhead in Guam at 6:45 a.m. Nothing further has come through in this direction. The next bad news came from Shanghai, which is a practically defenseless city now, with the United States Marines gone and the local defense forces stripped down to very small amount. The Japanese apparently attacked Shanghai at night, shelling and machine gunning the Bund and occupying the main waterfront. They are reported to have sunk a British gunboat and taken over the American gunboat Wake, which was in a partially decommissioned condition, acting as a communications contact for the American consulate in Shanghai. There should be little trouble in taking over the international settlement if the Japanese have not already done so. They probably have. That means that 2,000 or 3,000 Americans are stranded there, unable to get out. The latest news of what was happening in Shanghai, not in much detail, came to us through a German radio report from Shanghai itself. When word first came to Manila that Honolulu had been attacked and bombed, the world thought it was Manila that had suffered. That was apparently due to an erroneous report. One came through later here from London, to the effect that Manila had been bombed. So far, it is not true. But things have been moving very fast since word came about the Honolulu bombing. General Douglas MacArthur head of the United States Armed Forces in the Far East, was officially informed of a surprise attack on Hawaii in the middle of the night. Well before dawn, the Air Force had planes in the sky. The armed forces of the Far East are on alert and in the weather of action. They are rolling into position at strategic spots. Beaches where landings might be affected are reinforced according to plans laid long ago. General MacArthur's first concern was for panic. He issued a calming statement telling the Filipino populace not to lose their heads and turn into the country, blocking roads and highways which the military needs urgently for its own use. General MacArthur commended the populace for its poise and self-control during the last few weeks of uncertainty and anxiety here. And in a statement, he said, quote, "Nothing can help our military effort more than a continuation of this calmness and self-restraint. Each individual should continue with fortitude his usual routine and be prepared to carry out with constancy such directions as the authorities may order. These orders will be for the security and well-being of the people. The military is on the alert, and every possible defense measure is being undertaken. My message is one of serenity and confidence." End quote. Then General MacArthur made another move. With the consent of President Kaizen, the Civilian Emergency Administration, which is the Filipino-operated agency for protection of the civilian populace, has now been made responsible to the headquarters of General MacArthur. CEA officials are now reporting in, and measures for the civilian defense will be issued very shortly, General MacArthur said. Most of the city of Manila has not realized yet the portent of the news that we are at war. The news broke here too late for the regular editions of the papers. People got up and went about their business as usual. The news finally percolated to the community, and floods of telephone calls came into newspaper offices and government offices wondering if it was true that the United States was at war with Japan. I have just passed a whole schoolyard of children doing their morning exercises. The town looks fairly normal. Planes are overhead. A large group of them just went by at this moment, headed north from Nichols Field. They are American planes guarding against attack. The Navy is likewise on its toes. Admiral Charles Hart, Commander-in-Chief of the Asiatic Fleet, gave out word that hostilities had opened with an attack on Pearl Harbor in Honolulu. "Steps are being taken accordingly," was his laconic comment on that state of affairs. The Pan American Airways Clipper route runs directly across the zone of hostilities. The airline starts at San Francisco, goes to Honolulu, Midway, Wake, Guam, and the Philippines, then on to China or Singapore. The manager of Pan American Airways Manila office says they have a westbound clipper at Wake Island, but none others in the trouble zones, and none at Honolulu. There has been no time to check on what is happening at the clipper bases on Wake and Midway. A reliable source in Manila reports that the Japanese have an air base about 1,000 miles south of Wake in the South Pacific. It would be a long trip to bomb Hawaii from there, but if they send over big bombers, it could have happened. Manila, of course, wonders when its turn is coming. They noted the phraseology of the Tokyo announcement about a state of war in the Western Pacific. This is more properly the Western Pacific than is the region around Hawaii. Let me repeat, there have been no bombings in Manila. Yet. We don't know what to expect. Japan has pulled a surprise move in Honolulu. But the Philippines is also at war. Planes from the Air Command are scouting continuously over the coastlines and over central Luzon to intercept any possible attack from any direction that Japan might undertake. We have just received word, not fully confirmed, that Guam is in trouble. The cable company here found its line cut, and then word came along that bombers were sighted overhead at 6:45 a.m. Nothing further has come through. The next word came from Shanghai, which is practically defenseless now with the Marines gone. The United States Marines landed in Manila last week. The Japanese attacked the place apparently at night, shelling and machine gunning the famous Bund, Shanghai's waterfront. They are afraid to have sunk a British gunboat and taken over the American gunboat Wake, which was the only armed United States vessel in the vicinity. This boat was in a partially decommissioned condition, acting as a communications contact for the American consulate in Shanghai. Now, this is Ford Wilkins in Manila, returning you now to CBS in New York.
At about 3 minutes after 6 p.m. Eastern Time, the Red Network of NBC interrupted its New Friends of Music Classical Selections program for a special newscast during which Bert Silan, manager of KZRH, an NBC-operated station in Manila, made a transmission back to the United States.
We delay the start of our following program now to bring you a special broadcast. We take you now to Manila. We take you again to Manila.
This is Bert Silan speaking from Manila. The world by now knows what has happened in the Hawaiian Islands this morning. There appears to be an erroneous report that the bombing occurred in the Philippine Islands. Such, however, is not the case, and there appears to be no effort on the part of the Japanese, at least at this time, to invade the Philippines. I have just finished speaking to President Quezon over the telephone in Baguio. I asked the President for a statement, and here's what he said. The zero hour is here. Every man and woman must be prepared to do his duty. Be the order of the day. I asked him further if he would declare immediate evacuation from Manila. He replied that it was entirely up to General Douglas MacArthur. It is expected, however, that immediate evacuation of all danger zones, particularly Manila, will be ordered immediately, and that some form of martial law will be declared. We have just intercepted a message from Tokyo, from Imperial Headquarters. The Japanese government announced that since dawn on Sunday, Japan was in a state of war with the United States and Great Britain in the Western Pacific. We have also just received the news from President Roosevelt that other places beside Pearl Harbor in the Hawaiian Islands were attacked and bombed. It appears that all military and naval activities on the island of Oahu have been bombed. Navy intelligence of the United States Navy has just informed us that effective at once, no messages can be sent out of the Philippine Islands except in plain English. That is to say that no code or foreign language messages will be allowed. Naturally, the news of the bombing of the Hawaiian Islands came as a complete surprise to everyone here. Of all places in the Pacific, Honolulu was the last place expected to start this bombshell of war in the Far East. It appears at first glance that Japan is trying to keep the United States forces in or near the Hawaiian Islands to prevent interference with a prospective invasion of Thailand. It will be interesting to note in the next few hours what action Great Britain will take in this connection. As you know, British forces have been massing on the Burma frontier of Thailand, and Japanese forces have been massing on the Indochina frontier of Thailand, where Thailand seems to be caught in the middle. Whichever way the game goes, Thailand seems to be out of luck. It is believed that Great Britain will not hesitate to go into Thailand to prevent a Japanese invasion there, directed at the Burma Road and the Yunnan Province. We really haven't anything further to say at this time. We contacted General Douglas MacArthur early this morning by telephone, and he refused to make a statement so early in the game. Morley said that all Army and Navy forces in the Far East were on the alert and would await further word from Washington before making any further statements. We expect to be in constant contact with the National Broadcasting Company throughout the day, and as soon as any new developments, particularly pertaining to the Philippines, occur, we will do our best to give them to you. This is Bert Sarin speaking from Manila, now returning you to NBC.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
In the meanwhile, a complete blackout of the west coast of the United States was ordered as a defensive action against any potential air raids by Japanese bombers. In Seattle, Washington, CBS affiliate KIRO explained the situation to its listeners in this manner just before 7 p.m. Pacific time.
In the first place, there will be no radio broadcasting tonight after 7 o'clock, except perhaps for one of the Seattle stations, which will probably be KIRO. Leave your dial tuned to KIRO and you'll get the information that is necessary. There will be no programs broadcast, but any information necessary for the civilian populace will be broadcast over KIRO probably. There will be a complete blackout tonight at 11 o'clock. That blackout is not only for the city of Seattle, it includes every light between the California border, or rather the Mexican border, and the Canadian border. That is in the states of Oregon, Washington, and California. Every farmhouse, every light of any kind in that area must be out by 11 o'clock. To test your blackout, you will have plenty of time between the hours of 7 and 11, between now and 11 o'clock, to make arrangements to get heavy black paper to seal your windows, or heavy drapes, or something, and by going outside with your lights on, you can check before the hour set to see that you are completely blacked out. If you're unable to find materials and so forth to make your windows completely sealed so that no light will leak out, you must have your lights off. However, do not pull main switches. As we told you, ordinary window shades are not sufficient to black out your lights. Do not pull the main switches, however. Just use the switches on the in the rooms and on the lamps. No lights are to be used on automobiles, and no lights whatever are to be shown anywhere on the Pacific Coast, the states of Oregon, Washington, and California, until 30 minutes after daylight. From 11 o'clock tonight until 30 minutes after daylight tomorrow morning. Employers should arrange, if possible, that employees do not have to leave residences until after daylight. And, of course, in all probability, all buses, streetcars, and public transportation vehicles within the city will be off after 11 o'clock tonight. There will be no bus service between 11 o'clock tonight and 30 minutes after daylight tomorrow morning. It's advised that all persons remain indoors during the blackout, except those who have legitimate business and who are concerned in the air raid precautions and so forth, who have legitimate business outside the regular blackout. Maury, did you have something to say?
Just to add to what you've said, Jack, is this. Please do not use the telephone more than necessary because you do block the lines of communication. We must keep them clean. Do not call your radio stations or your other sources of information regarding the blackout. It has been ordered. Therefore, we must take it in the best faith that we possibly can. Remain calm. Stay in your home. You can leave your radio on and get all the information that you need to from KIRO. But please do not use the telephone more than necessary because you do block the lines of communication. We must keep them clean. And here's another bulletin handed me. All traffic signal blackout crew, of which there are approximately 300 members, report immediately to J.W. Belong, traffic engineer at 400 County City Building. And now by authority of the Federal Communications Commission, KIRO transmits on a frequency of 710 kilocycles with its new power of 50,000 watts. It's almost 7 o'clock, 5 seconds to go, and we'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, with information when ordered by the United States Army Interceptor Command here in Seattle.
The blackouts continued for another few nights, but were eventually discontinued. The following midday, President Roosevelt asked Congress for a declaration of war against Japan, and got it. The only no vote on the declaration coming from pacifist Congresswoman Jeanette Rankin, a Montana Republican who had also cast a no vote concerning the declaration of war that brought the United States into World War I. She would later become an early activist against the war on Vietnam. At about 1:45 p.m. Eastern Time on the 8th of December, Bert Seilin again broadcast back to NBC from Manila with this report.
This is the NBC newsroom in San Francisco. We take you now to Manila.
Hello, NBC. This is Bert Seilin speaking from Manila. It is now 2:45 in the morning of December the 9th. Almost 24 hours since the word was received here that the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor in the Hawaiian Islands. It has been a nerve-wracking and hectic day. And since dark, it has been a vigil of prayer and hope that enemy bombers would not come to disturb the peace and quiet of this moonlit city. But despite the order of total blackout, Manila has been bathed in brilliant moonlight since 10 o'clock by a moon that had only two nights before passed its full season. Deep down in our broadcasting dugout, we were suddenly disturbed by the wail of the air raid sirens. At exactly 12:40 a.m., the first real air raid alarm since the opening of hostilities sounded in Manila. Minutes went by and no sight or sound of any enemy planes came to back up the sirens' warning. It seemed hours, but was actually 1 hour and 5 minutes before the all-clear signal was sounded at 1:45 a.m. If enemy planes were near Manila, we have as yet received no confirmation. Contrary to a report made by another commentator in Manila today, the warning signal at 12:40 this morning was the first and only signal sounded up to this time. We would also like at this time to deny another report made from Manila to the effect that Japanese parachute troops had landed in the Philippines in an unknown area. The office of General Douglas MacArthur, commander-in-chief of the U.S. Armed Forces in the Prairies, not only emphatically denied the report, but stated that if such unfounded and unwarranted reports were continued by some commentators, a strict censorship would be slapped on all broadcastings emanating from the Philippines. I repeat, the Army headquarters emphatically denied that any enemy parachute troops have landed anywhere in the Philippine Islands. We have been listening with interest during the past few hours to reports from Tokyo and Berlin, and it can easily be imagined what the commentators in those countries are saying about America and President Roosevelt. A Berlin report has it that the transport General Hugh L. Scott was sunk 10 miles out of Manila. This, of course, is untrue, and if the General Scott was sunk or damaged, it was at least 1,800 to 2,000 miles away from these waters. In an order issued late tonight, Commonwealth President Manuel L. Quezon, in an effort to prevent the mad rush on the banks for withdrawal of cash money, stated that the limit of withdrawal by any depositor would be $100 during any 1 week, unless such depositor first secured a withdrawal license, which license would only be issued after good and sufficient evidence was submitted to prove that the money was needed for the carrying on of normal business or for other equally legitimate purposes. He has told him Manila's main business street looks like a row of summer houses, due to the fact that all the plate glass windows of the storefronts have been lattice in most intricate design with adhesive tape as protection against breakage from bomb concussion. Outside of the one short silent bath, the stillness of the starry night has been broken only by the sudden rush of mounted anti-aircraft units, rushing at almost breakneck speed through the darkened streets. Every now and then, a troop laden autobus goes dashing from here to there. And as soon as it is gone, the deathly stillness of a blackout night lays as a heavy mantle over this fair city. Vehicles of all kinds entering the approaches of all bridges are being stopped by soldiers in search of vagrant Japanese who have either evaded arrest or are known to be in hiding from the authorities. I have just listened with warranted American pride to the dramatic words of our president asking Congress to declare a state of war between the United States of America and the Japanese Empire. Listening to his words, I, as millions of others, must feel that the destinies of our country are in good hands. And I only wish you could have felt the thrill that I did when the strains of the Star Spangled Banner floated through the ether 10,000 miles across the American continent, across the Pacific Ocean, and into our little dugout here in war-ridden Manila. To us in this far-off country, the American flag is more than a red, white, and blue emblem. Today in Manila, the stars and stripes have been flung from every flagpole, on every building, in every plaza, and on the masthead of every ship. As one fellow American told me earlier this evening, his flag was hoisted to the top of the mast and was going to remain there until victory had been won. It is in this spirit that Americans and Filipinos alike are putting their shoulders to the wheels of defense, a defense which we know in a short time will turn into an offense that will only end in the complete annihilation of the ruthless partner of an even more ruthless dictator. Until 6:45 p.m. New York time, this is Bert Sion saying, hasta la vista. I'm returning you now to the NBC.
Thank you, Bert Sion in Manila.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
At about 2 p.m. Eastern time that afternoon, the Blue Network of NBC began a program of music by Vincent Lopez and his orchestra. After about 20 minutes or so, it was interrupted by an emergency broadcast from Bert Sion and Don Bell in Manila. Just as the previous broadcast had ended, Japanese Zeros began bombing Manila.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special broadcast. We take you now to San Francisco. This is the NBC newsroom in San Francisco. We take you now to Manila.
On the standby.
Hello, NBC. This is Bert Sion speaking from Manila, and this time I've got a real scoop for you. Manila has just been bombed. In fact, right now it is being bombed. As I told you a few moments ago, the all-clear signal had sounded, and then, without warning, Japanese bombers started bombing Fort William McKinley, Nichols Airfield, and the RCA transmitting station. The first we knew of it, we heard the terrible detonations, and then saw the huge blaze of incendiary bombs coming out of William McKinley and Nichols Field. We then saw the real fireworks display of blood red anti-aircraft tracer bullets going after those Japanese bombers, and we don't know yet what has happened out there. We're trying to locate the exact place of the tremendous fire that is raging and turning the sky absolutely crimson. To see if the air raid siren is still sounding. If it is, we're going to let you hear it for a while, and then I'm going to turn you over to Don Bell, who is upstairs out on the sidewalk looking at this fire and at this bombing, and he's going to give you his eyewitness description of the bombing that is now going on. This is the first bombing of Manila, and I will say it is big. It is uncanny the way those Japanese have picked out military objectives, and bang, right on the nose, they hit it. And now I'm going to see if Don Bell is up there on the other microphone. If he is, take it away, Don. Hold on. If you're around that microphone, come in on that microphone that's put up there outside of this dugout so we can get a description of what's going on up above. Are you up there, Don? Come on in, Don. I don't know what's happened to Don up there, but I can tell you that the fire is simply raging out there. For a few moments, we thought that we would not be able to get this through because the Japanese bombers may have paid a visit to the transmitting station of RCA, through whose transmitters we are putting this broadcast. The operator out there at the transmitting station at first was afraid that the bombs were going to hit the buildings, but apparently they missed, and we were able to give you this broadcast right in the midst of the first and terrific bombing of Manila. We hope this is coming through. We don't know exactly what's happening on the outside, but we do hope that the transmitter is still on the air. If it is, you are getting a first-hand report on the bombing of Manila, which occurred at exactly 3:09. At 3:09, without warning.
Time. I don't believe you can hear the air raid sirens now because they've quieted down. But at the present time, we're standing here on the right bank of the Pasig River. The Pasig River divides Manila exactly in half. On one side is the rich business district. On the other side is the residential district where most American people live. Directly across and beyond the residential district, it's the point of the Japanese bombers who have been flying over for the past 15 or 20 minutes. There's been a terrific bombing over there. There's been anti-aircraft fire going on for the past 10 or 15 minutes. It's quieted down now, and we do believe that the Japanese planes have left at the present time, and they have also left an enormous fire which is burning somewhere in the vicinity of Fort McKinley and Nichols Field. Fort McKinley is our large army base here, and Nichols Field is our largest air base in the Manila vicinity. There isn't much more we can tell you now because there isn't much more that we can find out at the present time from our point of vantage. But the action is concluded at the present time, and we do believe that the Japanese planes have gone by this time. Until we can tell you more, we'll turn you back to Bert Seilen. All right, I see we've still got the air here, folks, so we're going to move the microphone around to where we can. As we said before, in the vicinity of Nichols Field, there is a terrific fire that looks very much as though gasoline dumps are burning over there. It's a bit difficult for us to see at the present time. Bert, have you been able to check anything on that?
See, I couldn't resist coming up to see what was going on. As far as we know, it is either Nichols Airfield or McKinley. We haven't been able to check because we haven't been able to get through by telephone to anyone. But from the size of the fire, it certainly does look like some oil dumps or oil tanks were hit out in that direction.
Thank you, Bert. Ladies and gentlemen, there's one thing that we must point out at this time. The seeming accuracy of the Japanese bombing. We didn't expect anything of this state in the Philippines, actually. But it does seem very much as though the Japanese have come over for a specific target. They have hit the target. There has been no bombing of civilians or anything of that kind. The bombing has not been indiscriminate, but it seemingly has been very accurate. Our air defense force was very much on the job because there was a great anti-aircraft fire during the time of the air raid itself. The air raid does now seem to be over. We would like to point out that there was one false alarm a few hours ago here in Manila. Now in Manila, it is exactly, pardon me while I check our time, it is exactly 3:30 in Manila. That would be 4:30 Eastern Standard Time, and our first real air raid in Manila, the first in its history, has just been concluded. There's nothing more we can tell you now, and I believe that... Oh, yes, Bert.
We've just been informed by NBC that we can have the air as long as we need it, Don. And I suggest that we get clear up on the top of the Peacock building here in the Escola and see what we can see from the top of there. If you'll keep this thing going until I get up there, I'll take it away from you.
All right, thank you very much, Bert. Well, ladies and gentlemen, while Bert Seilen is going up to the roof there, pardon us while we go up to a vantage point where we will be able to contact him because we do not have earphones here and we're acting purely from signal at the present time because of the distance which we have stretched this microphone cord at the present time, we might give you a brief resume of what has happened here in the Philippine Islands during this day. We're giving you Philippine time now, which is exactly 13 hours ahead of Eastern Standard Time. At approximately 6:30 this morning, in the extreme southern part of the Philippine Islands, in Davao, at Davao Bay, there was the first bombing of the Philippine Islands. That was at approximately 6:30 when 13 Japanese bombers roared over Davao, bombed the air base there, and attempted to destroy all the food facilities in Davao. Later at 1:30 in the afternoon, a further Japanese bombing raid occurred there, and there are reports that the aircraft tender USS Langley was severely damaged at that time, and that the destroyer, I can't give you the name now extemporaneously, I've just forgotten, but there was a report that one U.S. destroyer was also damaged at that particular time. Later, from the north, obviously coming from Formosa, you may be able to hear those Japanese bombers flying overhead at the present time, ladies and gentlemen. They have not all disappeared yet, although they seemingly are out of the danger area, and we do not hear anti-aircraft fire at the moment. In any case, at 1:30 this afternoon, there was a further raid on Baguio, our northern mountain province, which is also the home of Camp John Hay. Pardon me for the cough. And that particular raid was obviously first directed toward Camp Clark, Clark Field, that would be, which is our largest Philippine air base. However, in Clark Field, it does seem that the defenses were excellent early this morning, and there was no actual bombing of Clark Field at that time. The bombers were turned back. However, on the way back, they did seemingly drop their bombs in Baguio at Camp John Hay and in northern parts of the Philippine Islands. The result that several people were killed in various parts of the Philippine Islands, then seven, we understand, were killed at Camp John Hay and Baguio. But later in the afternoon, at approximately 1:30, a terrific air raid was launched by the Japanese again against Clark Field. That is our largest air base in the Philippine Islands, you'll understand. And at latest reports, we understand that 300 casualties occurred at Camp Clark at that particular time. There's a report which we have not been able to confirm yet that some 25 American bombers were destroyed at that particular time as well. Can you see anyone up on the roof yet? We're waiting for Bert Silent to get up there and describe that. We cannot see, ladies and gentlemen, from where we are at the present time, but there is a terrific fire outside of Manila right now, and we are waiting for Bert Silent to confirm whether or not it is the large army base at Fort McKinley or the air base at Nichols Field. I don't believe that he has the air yet, so we'll continue, ladies and gentlemen, with some of the things that have happened here in the Philippines today. During the first air raid alarm, which occurred about 2 hours ago, we have heard reports, and we also heard some anti-aircraft fire and a few bombings, and there is a report that there was bombings of Corregidor, which is the large army defense base just outside Manila Bay. Corregidor is to Manila what Gibraltar is to the Mediterranean. It is one of our strongest army air bases, and there are reports that an attempted bombing was staged there, but that nothing very serious happened. So far as Manila was concerned, my first air raid, however, was a total false. Because in Manila, there were no bombs dropped whatsoever. However, this particular bombing really hit Manila. It did not hit the residential district of Manila. No civilian lives were lost, but at the same time, we do see that there has been a terrific damage to the army personnel in itself. At least that is definitely the way it looks here, because we believe that our airplane base over there has probably lost its gasoline stores, and that will be a loss to the people over here because most of our gasoline must be brought in. And at the present time, the Philippine Islands are, shall we say, more or less in an isolated condition so far as incoming ships and tankers are concerned. Ladies and gentlemen, we are waiting at the present time for our colleague, Bert Simon, to get up on top of the building here. We have an 8-story building which houses the KZRN studios. We're waiting for Bert Simon to get to the top of that building so that he may get a better vantage point and be able to describe to you more definitely exactly what is going on the outskirts of the city where that huge fire is flaming at the present time. Hello, Bert, are you on? Well, ladies and gentlemen, while we are waiting, we might tell you that the people here in the Philippine Islands have been splendid. We're working under very grueling conditions at the present time because we have been working definitely under fire. The Filipino people are as faithful and loyal to the American flag as are the Americans themselves, and we can remain absolutely confident that the Filipino soldiers are doing the same job that the American soldiers and the American Navy are doing, and they're all doing a very splendid job. I believe that Bert Allen can take over now. Come in, Bert, if you can. Going to wait as long as possible and attempt to give Bert Simon a chance to get up on top of that roof and to establish a contact so that he can broadcast directly to you and tell you what is going on. There isn't much of that fire that we can see now. It's subsided considerably, ladies and gentlemen, but we do see terrific smoke creeping up from what we believe is Nichols Field at the present time. We would like to reiterate the point that here, where we are under fire in the far eastern outpost of the United States defenses, that everything is going along just fine so far as we people are concerned. We're working under handicaps, as we said before, but we're going to keep right on going, and we're going to keep them flying over here. Can you get anything for Bert Island yet? We'd like very much to give the folks... This is a little difficult, ladies and gentlemen, working without earphones here because we don't know when we're establishing a point of contact. So we're going to keep right on talking for a while. Incidentally, ladies and gentlemen, a few hours ago, we did receive directly the message of President Roosevelt, and we think exactly the same thing about that speech as you folks back in the United States do think. It was only 500 words, but how well chosen those 500 words were. And although we're out here where we're going to get it right in the neck, perhaps, we're still 100% behind our president and behind the Congress that voted unanimously for this declaration of a state of war against Japan. Japan, so far as Formosa's concerned, and those are the nearest bases, Japan is only 420 miles from us here, but we are determined to carry on in the face of anything that goes on because we are determined that the United States must win the ultimate victory in this conflict. Can you get Bert Simon yet? We'd like very much to get a description of this. Well, I don't know, ladies and gentlemen, whether you can hear us or not, but we will tell you again that we have just gotten over Manila's first air raid, the first air raid in its history, and from the Japanese point of view, it was a splendid night for an air raid. There are millions of stars shining. They selected their time carefully because the moon, a very bright half moon, is directly above us at the present time, which means that so far as the Japanese bombers coming in are concerned, the visibility was practically zero so far as land defenses were concerned. They selected their time and their position carefully, and it is a very bright moonlight night. Manila is in a state of total blackout. Blackout so far as is humanly possible, but the stars and the moon make it very impossible for us to have a complete blackout here. Yes? I shall continue.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we're speeding for Burt's Island to get a vantage point there.
We'll tell you a little more about Manila.
The Pasig River, on which we are standing at the present time, bisects Manila. On one side is the business district, or the Escolta. We hear anti-aircraft fire again, ladies and gentlemen, so it seems that they're coming back again. We'll let you know more about it in just a few moments. It's a little too early to tell just where that anti-aircraft fire is coming. At the present time. You see, we are more or less ringed by armed defenses.
Hello, Don.
Standing at the present time is...
Hello, Don.
Hello, Don.
The elevator boy ran out on us, and I had to climb up. Eight flights of fire escape. So I'm a little bit out of breath. But in the meantime, from the rest of the staff here, I've checked up, and we definitely concluded that the fire is now out at Nichols Field. That's the big airfield right in the heart of Manila, in the south part of Manila. We do not know exactly what is burning, but from what we can see from the top of this building, the whole southern skies are brilliant red. A little while ago, I told you that we witnessed the anti-aircraft fire, which was a brilliant tracer bullets going up after those Japanese bombers. And I hope I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to let you speak to them. I'm going to let one of KZRH's staff members who's up here with me speak to you. Bud Wallace, talk to them for a little while.
Thank you, Bert.
Hello, everybody.
That's what I'm dropping. Look out, Wally. We can see very well. It's a vantage spot. We can completely cover the entire Manila area. Looking over to one side, Cavite. Out to the other side, Nichols Field.
Fort William McKinley.
Out to the other side, the foothills which surround Manila.
Also, military posts would get these out that way.
And over on the other side, even still more so,
pointing up towards Clark Field in Pampanga.
Here we are, surrounded by
these objectives and raids going on.
The all-clear did sound a little while ago, but still,
even though it has, you can still see
the embers blazing
and dying away. The fire is just about out now at Fort...
I should say, at Camp Nichols.
Nichols Field, I don't believe has any oil storage
or gasoline storage dumps to amount to a great deal.
But they do have a lot of hangars
and warehouses
and things operated there where they store their airplane spare parts
and assembly and so forth.
And it must be those hangars
and those storage facilities which we've just seen bombed before our very eyes and burning. That's about all that I know about it, Bert.
All right, Dad. I'm getting my breath back a little bit. I might say that right now, the moon is shining absolutely full. It's just like day. From up here where we are, the galvanized iron roofs, painted, Mexico painted with chrome paint, stand out like mirrors. And there's no wonder that an enemy bomber could pick out any spot around this part of Manila tonight. It doesn't follow the blackout. There isn't a light shining any place. But old man Moon just wouldn't stay blacked out. Although, from reports of bombings earlier this morning, it appears that the Japanese have got their objectives mighty well spotted. They have not hit a single non-military objective or a piece of civilian property so far. The result of the bombing here in Manila just now, as far as we know, was confined to Nichols Field, or Camp Nichols, as we call it out here. As I told you before, there was an attempt made.
Thank you, Bert and Don. And now this is San Francisco returning you to New York.
One final note on the reporters from Manila heard during this program. Fort Wilkins of CBS and Bert Silent and Don Bell of NBC were captured by the Japanese Army and spent 3 years as prisoners of war at the Santo Tomas camp in the Philippines. Santo Tomas was liberated by General Douglas MacArthur's troops on the 3rd of February, 1945. After their liberation, all three returned to their duties as journalists, Wilkins becoming the editor of the Manila Daily Bulletin newspaper, Silin as a broadcaster for NBC, and Bell as a broadcaster for the Mutual Network. In fact, on a previous broadcast in this series, we heard Silin's comments on the weekend leading up to the announcement of Japanese surrender, ending World War II. By that time, Silin had been relocated to San Francisco. That concludes this week's broadcast of Echoes of a Century. This program was an independent production by Dahl II Radio Creations, copyright 2006. Produced in the studios of WLSU La Crosse, an affiliate of Wisconsin Public Radio, on the La Crosse campus of the University of Wisconsin. I'm King David McKenzie. Thanks for listening. I hope that you'll join us again at the same time next week. Until then, remember, fear and God do not inhabit the same space.